Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, December 7th. I'm Ray Graff. We discuss birds today on the show, and we welcome back our experienced birder, Rich Guthrie. Also welcoming back Nancy Castillo of Wild Birds Unlimited. They are here to provide their insights on everything to do with birds. You may have seen one today. We'll talk about it. The number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number, and get in line early. It's always good. This program tends to be very popular, and we always end up leaving people on the line. If you want to get in, do it now, 800-348-2551. Birds with Rich and Nancy, and your calls coming up. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call and talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We discuss birds every month or so, and today is the big day for you bird lovers. Rich Guthrie and Nancy Castillo are here, a veteran birder, a former NCON specialist, a one-time compiler of the Catskill New York Christmas Bird Count for the National Audubon Society, and a board member of the New York Ornithological Association. Rich Guthrie is our resident avian expert. And then another guest who shows up in our nest every few months or so, Nancy Castillo, who owns Wild Birds Unlimited in Saratoga Springs, and Wild Birds Unlimited stocks supplies for feeding and observing birds. They're fun guests to have. If you have a bird question, give us a call now, 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. Nancy and Rich, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ray. Thanks, nice to be here.
So the big excitement, if I discern your excitement level appropriately, is the Christmas bird count, which is coming up.
Yes, indeed. Lots of Christmas bird counts. This is something the National Audubon Society conducts once a year for the last 117 years.
Right.
And this is where each year for a day, people go out, count all the birds in a specific area, report them in, and it goes on to a big map, a big global map of North America, Canada, Mexico, South America. And we get an idea of what's happening out there and the, most importantly, what changes in what's happening out there.
And how many are there in this listening area? If you had to estimate.
I would say that there's probably 35 to 40 wow. of them in different count circles, it's called. And these are 15-mile diameter circles that don't overlap. They're scattered about New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut, New Jersey, all each of the states and up into Canada across the country.
Is there a theory or a strategy behind the placement of these circles?
Yes. They like to disperse them as widely as possible, but given population dynamics of people, they tend to be clustered around urban areas or city areas like the Albany, Hudson Valley, Connecticut River Valley, the Connecticut Shore, Long Island. So there are these clusters of these things. But then as you go out further west into the prairie states, they become wider spread out.
But still 15 miles in diameter.
They're all this, that part is the same.
And why is that?
Arbitrarily set up way back in 1900-something.
Hmm.
So that was the parameters set up then, and they work with that kind of rule consistently through the years. Of course, things change. It used to be on Christmas Day, but obviously that didn't work well with the popularity of the Christmas bird count.
Okay.
You know, it became more and more difficult for people. And it's now an all-day event, so it's before dawn and after dark, depending on the stamina, the interest level of the group. People got out there in the wee hours of the morning looking for owls and the like, and people stay out late trying to find the birds that they missed early in the morning. And a big part of it nowadays is the get-together afterwards, where you sit down with dinner, nice warm meal someplace, and you compare notes. And it's a competitive event. The various groups of 4 to 5 people in each group will compete with one another, and one count circle will compete with another for the most different bird species and the rarest of the bird species and the fun bird events and that's so.
Well, pardon my cynicism.
Go ahead.
But if in fact this is a competitive endeavor, human nature being what it is,
I know.
So would there not in fact be some inflation of stats.
Some imaginative burden. Yes. Right. Wrong.
No?
No. That's where, as a compiler, I become everybody's worst unfriend.
So you're the auditor.
And each of the compilers, their job is to keep the, you know, corral all these reports to make sure that, you know, that they're on the up and up, that the wild guesses out there are somehow modified by a little bit of documentation or believability, smell test, and you know, so like I say, you become unfriended with some people because, well, you don't believe that I saw this Canadian. Yeah.
Well, Rich, you are famous for having seen a very near mythical bird.
Indeed, not
and
mythical.
Some people
fact,
don't believe
near,
you.
A real thing.
Some people don't believe you.
And I don't blame them.
So what happens when Rich, the compiler, shows up and says, well, look, I don't believe you
for a second. Trust me.
Nancy, have you ever done this?
I haven't done the Christmas bird count, but there are a couple other opportunities this winter for people that might not be at that level to do the Christmas bird count.
Do they have a Hanukkah bird count?
That moves. So, no.
Okay.
I think that's what we celebrate it with the Christmas bird count. But
it goes into the Christmas season. It's a Christmas period from the middle of December till the beginning of January, the period of about a couple of weeks that envelop the count so that individuals can get out onto more than one. We have one friend, George Steele, who's been on the show. George has there's five or seven or an incredible number of Christmas bird counts. He goes around from, you know, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Was there good money in that?
Yeah, zero. And that's always good money,
I suppose.
Well, for those of us that are, you know, maybe a little more recreational throughout the winter, sponsored by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, there's a Project Feeder Watch, and it's it runs from November until April. Once a week, you just watch the birds in your own backyard.
At the same time every week?
They prefer 2 days, like I'm a Monday-Tuesday counter. And if I can watch 1 week on a Monday and I can't watch on that Tuesday, I'm fine.
But same time of day, though?
No, you could watch for 15 minutes. You could watch for 4 hours or 8 hours. Hmm. And you count the birds, and you submit the information to the Cornell Lab of Ornithology Project Feeder Watch site, and it helps them understand winter bird populations as well. And then in February over the, I know this is a little bit off, but in February over the President's Day weekend, we always have the 4-day Great Backyard Bird Count. Hmm. So lots of ways to take your interest in watching the birds and helping contribute to science and understanding the birds.
From the comfort of home.
Nice. And can people find out, can any layman join one of these bird counts?
Absolutely.
And how do you
do
that?
And in fact, that's encouraged. You can. The easiest way is to go to the Audubon Society. If you're in New York State, you go to the New York State Ornithological Association.
It's easy for you to say.
I know. Well, not that time. And look up their website. And there's a whole listing of the locations and the dates and the contact information for the counts in New York State.
Now, offhand, I know you're not the best with web URLs, but do you remember what the website is for that?
Yeah, newyorkbirds.org.
Wow!
Yay!
I thought you got one. I'll be darned. I better go play the numbers.
Yeah.
By the way, the number to call here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. I tell you what, after one of our breaks, you can list some of the bird counts that are going on.
As an example.
All right. So let's go to the phones at 800-348-2551. Edward in Loudonville, you're first. Hi, Edward.
Hello. I have a quick question about a real bird.
Okay.
Chickadees. I wonder if you could just give me a quick psychobiography of chickadees. They seem to be the only birds that will come to my feeder while I'm walking around the feeder. No other bird will do that, and they'll sing, and they seem to be quite interactive. So I'll hang up and let you give me a quick rundown on chickadees. Thank you,
Edward. We appreciate the call.
I think that is one of the things that endears the chickadee to so many people, you know, is because they'll go out to fill their feeder and the chickadee will be waiting just off in the wings just a little bit, waiting for you to finish feeding it. They might even swoop down and you hear that familiar brum, brum. as their wings flutter and everything. So there are some other birds that will do that. Some of the most common ones that, you know, might take seed out of your hand, besides the chickadees, a tufted titmouse will also do that. And I also found that the downy woodpecker is one of those birds that are less spooky about humans being right around them. But the chickadee, I think that they're acclimated. They become acclimated to the people around.
Has that changed over time? I mean, were they more skittish 20, 30 years ago?
No. No, they've always had this personality that drew them to right up to people, and they land on their... When it's a trust factor, and they learn quickly that they can trust you and do. And to the point where they'll come and land on your hand. If you're patient enough and give them a chance, also the tufted titmouse, which is a relative to the chickadee, and some of the other ones, like the downy woodpecker, it's a trust factor. And some of these more familiar backyard birds, that's why they're backyard birds, is because they learn to live near people and adjust to people's presence.
And Nancy, have you ever fed a bird out of your hand?
I have.
Really?
Yep. A chickadee, in fact.
Isn't that a little frightening the first time?
Oh, no, because, the way that I did it is that I had a feeder hanging on my window, and I knew that they were feeding their young, so I was putting out live mealworms, and I had a double-hung window, and I just opened the window enough for me to get my arm out, stuck my hand out there, and had the mealworms on my hand, and they fed.
Amazing.
Fed from that. And you barely feel them on your hand. And they're not, they don't linger.
They're featherweights.
Yeah. But I'll tell people that, like if you're going out in the woods, throw a handful of peanuts into your pocket when you go on a hike. And see, and if you have a chickadee or a titmouse or even a downy nearby, put some out on a big, flat, open hand and see if they'll take food.
Okay, hygienically speaking, to a feed
a bird
out of your hand?
Yeah.
All right, well, let's take a break here. 800-348-2551 is our number. We're joined today on this bird show by Rich Guthrie and Nancy Castillo, and we will get to more calls in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from the Nature Conservancy's Adirondack chapter, working to protect ecologically important lands and waters of the Adirondacks for nature and people, nature.org/Adirondacks. Clipcentric Albany, a local video services division of Clipcentric, producing video advertisements for businesses throughout the capital region for web, mobile, and TV. Albany.clipcentric.com. Edgar Bosick, certified financial planner, privatefinancialdesign.com, securities through Cambridge Investment Research, member FINRA and SIPC. Mango Tree Imports, a global fair trade shop in downtown Saratoga Springs, New York, featuring artisans goods from more than 60 countries, mangotreeimports.com and Facebook. And the Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, giving children the education and tools for the challenges of an ever-changing world, waldorfsaratoga.org.
Welcome back to the program. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551. Nancy Castillo is here and Rich Guthrie. It's the Bird Show, and let's go to Ann in Adams, Massachusetts. Ann, you're on.
Oh, hi. Hi. By the way, I've fed chickadees out of my hand. I think that's so awesome. So speaking about chickadees, I have two quick questions. One question is there any way to tell, like, a boy chickadee from a girl chickadee? Or it doesn't really matter, but I just wondered.
About the only chance that you have even a possibility is during breeding time, because during the rest of the year, they just look identical to each other. But there is a way during breeding season, if you're watching really close and you get a good view of a certain area, that you might be able to make a guess.
What area would that be?
And second question is, apropos to the bird count, I am completely mystified, but I have three feeders out. And for a while there, I mean, the birds were all over the place. And for the last couple of weeks, there's hardly a bird around. And I'm actually going to go and get new bird feed because maybe they don't like what I have out there. But it's creepy. And it actually ties in with my very ancient cat who just passed away. And she used to sit in the window, and I wondered, maybe they miss her. I don't know.
There could be a change in something that's going on outside, either the appearance of a cat that's outside that, you know, could be a potential predator for the birds in the area, or a hawk that has taken up to the area. Changing your bird food is not a bad idea. We've had some kind of wet snow. Your bird seed in your feeders could be compacted and getting moldy and unavailable to the birds and not as fresh. But then, you know,
kind of freaked me out. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go buy more birdseed.
Well, the other thing, too, is that we've had a pretty mild winter so far. And the birds really are out there checking the other resources. They'll be back. Don't you worry.
You're always very relaxed about that. They'll come back.
Yeah, now that you mention that, I see them, like, picking at stuff in the underneath the trees in the back.
Yeah.
And maybe they're getting enough food and they don't need my bird seed.
But they love you for it anyway.
And when things get bad, they'll come groveling back. Anne, thank you very much. Let's go to Cynthia in West Cornwall. Cynthia.
Hi, Rich and Nancy. I have a real woodpecker problem here. We're surrounded by trees, but they're after the siding on our house. And so if I'm gone for work for the day, they're pecking little holes, but one hole was the size of a baseball. So my husband and I patched it up with foam insulation, and we're going to use wood filler and restain and everything. And what we did a couple of days ago was we hung these long metallic strips from different parts of the roof. Supposedly they move in the wind and scare the woodpeckers. Can you think of anything more effective?
Well, the woodpecker thing is a problem. It's a problem because there is no real easy solution for it. The reason why they are there is what the problem is. And it's disconcerting to say, but, you know, they're there for a couple of reasons. One is for nesting, and the other one is for territorial defense, and the third one is for food. And being as we're not in the nesting season and they really don't have a strong territorial instinct going right now, then you got to think about what the other one is, and that is the food.
Oh, boy.
They're probably looking for insects that are living in the wood, carpenter ants or carpenter bees or even termites or the like.
Yeah, the odd thing about it is that we're surrounded by trees, like I said, and our house is relatively new, and I don't understand why we're being targeted.
Well, again, they're not. It's not personal. Trust me. But they're not doing it to waste their time. They're doing it for specific reasons. And so I would give some serious thought as to what's really drawing them to there.
Making sure that you don't have some insects there that they're in search of. I live in a hot log home, and I had that for a period of time until I, really took care of the root problem, which was some insects within the wood.
Yeah.
So, and as far as the little strips of Mylar tape, pick the areas where they seem to be bothering the most and leave those, just tack them or staple them up onto the wood and do let them just free flow. So we have had some success with that as well.
Our guests today, Nancy Castillo and Rich Guthrie. It's the Bird Show today, 800-348-2551. Melanie in Buskirk. Melanie, you're on.
Hi. I have a question about the bird count, especially when you're watching your own feeder. We have a whole mess of chickadees and various times of the year, goldfinches, and we have a lot of the typical birds. But how do you know you're not counting the same bird over and over again?
That's my question, Melanie. That's exactly my question, and Guthrie can never answer that question.
You just count them one at a time until you count them all at that or there at one time. And, that's not an easy task. And what you have to do is get the maximum number and take that and go with that.
Because they'll take a seed, they leave.
I know, they keep coming back and forth. And that's interesting.
I don't know which one.
But it's all about relative abundance. If there are 10 of them out there, you're going to have a parade of 10 coming and going, and it's going to reflect in some fashion that 10. If there's 100, you're going to have a bigger parade with a lot more participants coming and going more and more. So, again, it's all about this year versus last year versus 10 years ago and 15 or 20 years ago. So it's all, there are a lot of variables in here that you have to take into consideration and go with the flow. Don't fight it.
Okay, can I ask one more question
real
quickly? We used to have a whole lot of goldfinches, We had them until they put their summer coats on. Everyone was gorgeous. And they've all just disappeared. And usually I have them here at the winter. I use the thistle seed. This year, I'm just not seeing any of them.
Goldfinches are notorious for moving around quite a bit. So they may leave your area and you won't see them for months on end, and then they'll come back in groups, and then you will have a good season. Up in the Saratoga area, we've been having pretty good goldfinch activity actually since spring through the summer and into the winter. So, goldfinches are notoriously nomadic as far as moving around and their movement.
Okay.
So, but make sure that your Niger seed is fresh. If your activity goes down, only fill your feeder part way. You don't have to fill it all the way if they aren't going to it. And then also make sure that your Niger seed isn't more than 3-4 months old. It's a really oily seed when it dries out. They're less interested in it. So
Niger seed is the thing for goldfinches.
Absolutely, yeah. They're hooked on it.
Niger seed and sunflower chips or sunflower out of the shell.
Interesting. Yeah. All right, let's go to line 5 and Bob in Pittsfield. Bob, you're on.
Hi, Ray. I had a sharp-shinned hawk in the backyard a couple of weeks ago, and I was just wondering how common or uncommon that is in this area.
Well, the sharp-shinned hawk is one of the smaller hawks who's to the dismay of many backyard bird watchers, feeds on backyard birds. Mm.
That's how I noticed it. I looked up at one point in time, and there wasn't a bird in the backyard, and I'm saying, what the heck's going on? And then I spotted him under the pine tree there.
Yep.
About 10 minutes, and then he left, and it took about an hour before the rest of the birds came back.
Yeah, there's a comfort level that they have to reach before they'll come back. But the sharpshin and the Cooper's hawks are notorious for buzzing by like blue bullets into a backyard bird feeder area, and then they move on. They're not common. They're not common, but if you're putting out a table of birds for them, they'll come for dinner.
Oh boy!
And but that's the way it is. I mean, they are birds, and they have to care for their young, and they have to find food for themselves and survive the winter. The other hawks, like the red-tailed hawk, will find mice, or voles, or rabbits, and the rabbit will be quite large for a red-tailed hawk. But that's the cycle of the way it is out there.
Okay, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Thanks. And why do they call them sharp-shinned?
Oh, well, that's a good question. This goes back to the way back into the long, long 1800s when they were naming birds, identifying through the barrel of a shotgun.
Ah.
Back in that day, Audubon, that crowd. And the Cooper's hawk has a nice clean cut of feathers along the legs, and the sharp-shinned hawk has a ruffled edge to it. The rough-legged hawk is a similar thing. They have that feathered feet or feathered legs.
I never even knew a hawk had shins at all.
Shins. Yes. Well, I mean, that's kind of like a appellation. I mean, it's not really shins. It's actually a foot. The leg of a hawk that you see is actually an elongated foot.
Huh.
And the claws are the toes of that foot.
Well, I'll be darned. Let's go to Larry in Highland. Larry, you're on the Bird Show.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I want to tell that lady about woodpeckers. I put up a fake owl, and it solved the problem.
Okay.
Well, you're the only one.
Yeah.
No, it was really strange. It kept coming to the house and beating on the house, and I went to a tractor supply place, and I put up one of those owls, and lo and behold, it left.
Good. So, if it worked for you, perhaps it will work for Cynthia, who called earlier, and... to that, I say more power to you. But
good for you.
You know, many times these owls, these plastic owls that you see on buildings and the like, don't work at all. I mean, I've seen birds perch on the head of those things.
They become the perch of the bird you're trying to destroy.
I moved it around a few times, so it seems like it's flying. I'm changing perches. But anyway, other thing is I wanted to ask you, Rich. You said that woodpecker that supposedly is extinct or something, and you saw it someplace?
Oh, sure did.
Down in Arkansas, yep. I can tell you about it.
Is that true? I mean,
well, would I lie?
No, I don't know. But I'm just trying to figure out.
That's a good point. We don't know if he's lying. Tell us about it, Rich.
What happened? I mean,
here's a story. A quick story. I was down there with the with Cornell University people. We were on a search for what was reported to have been ivory-billed woodpeckers in the woods of northeast Alabama, Arkansas, I should say. And there I was one day, and one of these things flew right across an opening, right in front of me. I had a great look at it, and. You know, that's the way it is. I mean, I'm familiar with the other look-alike woodpecker, the pileated woodpecker, certainly enough, and this was not one of them. So, and then the rest of the story is in the details. But again, as Ray pointed out, and as I will admit, and I would have been the skeptic myself, I don't blame people for being skeptical about it because I don't have the verifiable proof, the evidence to prove that it was what I said it was. But I can.
But is there a breeding population down there now? Or do
no,
they know that? Or
no, no. To answer your question,
no.
No, or not likely.
When was the last purported sighting?
Back in 1997 or 2007 when I was there.
Really?
That was it. Well, maybe one or two afterward. Then again, you know, I look at the other reports with skepticism, and I say, you know, what can I tell you?
Well, thank you, Larry. How close is that bird to the pileated woodpecker?
There's a whole group of that large woodpecker through in North America, Central America, and South America. These pileated, depends on where you're all from,
right?
Kind of thing, but. And they're closely related, like the hairy and downy woodpecker, or the red-headed and a red-bellied woodpecker.
Close in appearance, but you would know the difference?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the appearance is strikingly different, very different. I mean, in size and in behavior, to some respect, that you can tell, you know, they are closely related, but in appearance.
Where was your camera?
It was at my hip. Yeah, I know. Here is the story, and I'll tell you about this, is that I could have grabbed, I was hoping the bird would pull up on a tree, and if I reached for the camera, I knew it would have kept right on going.
Right.
So I hoped that if I stayed still, it would pull up on a tree, I could get the camera and get a picture. Right. It decided it was going to keep going anyway, so
Before our next break, let's take a couple of email that have come in here from voxpop@wamc.org. This is from Kim, who says, I live in the Berkshires, and over this past weekend, there were roughly 10 bluebirds hanging around our birdhouses. Isn't this unusual? I thought they went south for the winter, or do they stay in the area year-round?
Year-round. And that you had 10 of them. Bluebirds in winter are gregarious, and they will, many times, they will use the same nest box as a communal overnight roost. So, yeah, lucky you. Keep an eye on them.
What'll be nice is if you can attract them to your bird feeders, because they will eat stuff if you offer the right foods out for them. They're insectivores, or they like insects during the summer, but obviously those are not as prevalent now. But if you put out live mealworms or some suets, broken up suets for them, or a seed with no shells, so like a no-mess blend or something like that. They don't have the right kind of beak to open shells. So, you know, there's a possibility they might hit your feeder throughout the winter
great.
As well.
How many will fit in an overnight roost?
Not that. It depends on the size of the roost. I've seen them go into woodpecker hole in the woods, and, you know, 8 or 10 of them will fly in there. They don't want you to see them flying in. They'll do this very, very quietly, secretly. But I saw a picture of one that somebody took inside a nest box up in Ontario, Canada. And it must have been 8 or 10 of them in that, you know, all looking up as this fellow was taking a picture.
Huh.
Cute.
Cute as that.
All right. This one came in from Brendan in Ulster Park. There are always many small birds, I think finches, that love hanging around my back stoop and making nests in our roll-down awnings. I don't want them gone completely, but how can I deter them from nesting in our awnings? We cleaned one out the other day, and they look to be creating a new one almost immediately. They're small with mostly brown on their backs, plus a small white stripe. They also have a spot of black on their chin. That's from Brendan in Ulster Park.
It sounds like house sparrows, and house sparrows, as the name implies, like to live near houses, people's houses, and they are tenacious when it comes to that, but...
They're not your favorite, right?
Well, you know, it's hard to pick a favorite amongst birds. I mean, the house sparrow is hard to like, but one of the good features is that they are sort of like a magnet for other birds. And now's the time, I might add, for rare birds to show up in the backyard. the wintertime when birds are out of their normal range and they show up because of all the activity in the yard. And the house sparrows are part of that activity draw for them. So this is when people start finding the real good, fun, rare birds. And if that's the case, we want to hear about it.
Give me an example of a rare one that might be
Saratoga. That hangs out with the house sparrows is called a dickcissel. The dickcissel.
Beg your pardon?
Dickcissel. Dickcissel.
All right.
Now, they get their name because that's how their song sounds. It sounds like it's saying dickcissel, you know, something buzzy like that.
Sure.
Yeah. And there's a wonderful little poem about the dickcissel. But in any event.
Can you say it on the radio?
Yeah.
That's the question.
Yeah, we could, if okay. I could remember it. But
right,
in any
well,
event.
Don't bother.
They like house sparrows, and they look like house sparrows. So you got to look over those little flocks of birds for the little subtle differences between them, and then let us know. ebird.org is one way to do it, or email to richardpguthrie@gmail.com is another way to do it, and we want to know about these rare birds that show up.
Nancy Castillo, have you seen any rare ones this season?
I haven't, but I'm still kind of keeping an eye out for pine grosbeaks and perhaps some evening grosbeaks.
Evening grosbeaks. They're the ones that everybody's watching for this year. They're
Why?
Well, because they're big, they're beautiful, they're spectacular looking. And
how big?
They're about robin size for a finch. I mean, and they're not a finch. They're a grosbeak, about the size of a cardinal, but their proportions are different. They're more robust, and they're bright gold and black and white. Oh. And on the male and the female is this beautiful subdued color, greenish yellow and gray.
Do you think there's any hope for this? I mean, why would people be looking for this particular bird at this time?
They're nomadic as the goldfinches, but much further removed in their range. They're a Canadian across the Canadian taiga to Manitoba and up into Alaska, but every now and then they surge forward, and they're now lots of signs that people are reporting them throughout the Northeast, and so this may be the year of the evening grosbeak.
And I think part of it is also anybody who's been feeding birds for multiple decades remember days when they would hit their bird feeders in numbers of 50, 60, 70 of them and just go through their black oil sunflower seed just, you know, like that. So, and that was during an outbreak of the spruce budworm, so an abundant food source for them that brought them down in bigger numbers than typical. And then that was cleared up, so now we just don't see them as much anymore. So everybody just loves being able to catch a sight of the evening grosbeak.
Nancy Castillo is our guest. Also, Rich Guthrie. We'll take a break here. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We'll be back with the home stretch and your calls on Vox Pop.
Support for WAMC comes from The Whistling Kettle, Troy, and Boston Spa, offering freshly baked quiche with a variety of herbs and spices, including vegetarian offerings, thewhistlingkettle.com. Interim Healthcare, celebrating 45 years of in-home care, supports the Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy's 17 Capital Region Preserves, hiking and outdoor activities, interimhealthcare.com. Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley, we conserve good farmland for good forever, agstewardship.org. Shannon Rose Design, Saratoga Springs, New York, working to help companies and organizations express their identities through corporate branding, web design and development, and graphic design for almost 3 decades. ShannonRose.com. And Rhinebeck Artist Shop, Rhinebeck, New Paltz, Kingston. 40 years of providing professional picture framing, fine art materials, and holiday art sets, stocking stuffers, and materials for young artists. RhinebeckArt.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, Rich Guthrie, Nancy Castillo, my guests today. And boy, we talk birds every month or so, and this has been a great one. And before we get back to the phones, Rich, I know that your live speaking appearances have been going extremely well.
Busy, busy, busy.
You're really an entertainer now. You're like John Davidson, right? Oh, sing a couple of songs, tell a story.
Little dance, a little soft shoe.
Right. So when's the next
card
gig?
Tricks. Tomorrow evening. in Sand Lake, New York.
Ah.
Yes, right around the corner.
Beautiful.
And at the Rensselaer Plateau Alliance at 7 p.m. at the Sand Lake Town Hall. And I'll be talking about birds.
Really?
Yes.
No kidding, birds?
Yes, indeed.
Wow. And quickly, before we go back to the phones, we have so many calls. We'll try to move quickly. You had a list of some, just a partial list of some of the bird counts if people are interested.
Well, let me just start with by saying that these are all available online. You could go to the National Audubon Society's webpage and look at Christmas bird counts in New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Vermont. But here in New York, from the New York NYSBirds.org, on the 17th of December, I'll just go through this. Chatham, Dutchess County, Orange County, Mohonk Lake, Oneonta, New York, Peekskill, New York, and Schenectady, New York. So it goes on like
yeah.
that. Those are all on the same day, the very first Saturday of the count
period.
You
said that's the 17th?
17th of December.
All right, and now the phone number is 800-348-2551. As we get ready to go to the phones, this email came in from Henry. Beautiful picture of a hawk. It was in his backyard chasing a flock of robins. What do you think, Rich?
Well, we were just talking about this guy, the Sharpshin hawk, and that's what this little guy is. You can tell by the way the feet has – not that you can tell the Sharpshin, but it has that it's a smaller hawk with a square-tipped tail. And it's an adult bird because of the barring that you could see on the breast.
Okay.
So,
there you go.
And that's what they do. They chase birds around.
Let's go to Dorcas in Olive Ridge. You're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure thing.
Listen, I put out major feeders from white to white. I don't feed unless the ground's white. So I wanted to do a bird count a number of years ago. And I feed hundreds of birds, probably... Well, when the pine siskins came down a number of years ago, literally thousands. I was doing 20 pounds of unshelled bird seed a day.
Wow.
And they were cleaning it. How do I do a bird count?
Well, I could say one at a time, but what you got to do is you look out there and you get a sample of the maximum number at any one time.
Okay, so maybe I should just put out one feeder?
Well, no, don't limit your bird feeding. Just, again, as many different bird feeders, but at one time you're going to have 10 chickadees or five nuthatches or the like, and those are the ones that you report. If there are six or eight, as long as you're consistent in your style and your technique, then it's all relative. It's all comparative to the last time you took the count and the next time you take the count.
You do find yourself having to dedicate your count to a certain bird at one glance. So you're looking out at your feeders and you see that there's five different types of birds out there. You do find yourself saying, okay, I'm going to kind of do my quick count of how many chickadees I see at one time. Mm. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's your high count of chickadees. The next time you might see...
Oh, no.
But I'm just giving an example.
25 on one feeder.
25 on a feeder.
There you go. There's
your
number.
So there's your number. The next time you look out and you see 12, that's not your count. 25, your high count, remains the count that you would report on the count. Now, when the birds become so numerous that you count them, you have to estimate. You take a little sample and you say, I'm going to look at this little circle the square that's like 1 foot square, and I see 10 birds in that, and I have this, and then count up how many of those squares you're looking at. And you just do the best you can to estimate when they're, pine siskins can be all over the ground, and that's how you would estimate your
Couldn't
pine
siskins.
Couldn't
you just siskins. Take a picture and count
you
it later?
You could take a picture. That's one way of doing it. Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right, Dorcas, thank you very much for the call. Over to Janice in Galway. Janice, you're on.
Yes, hi, guys. I love the store, by the way. I did a lot of my Christmas shopping there, and we'll go back again before Christmas. It's a godsend. Love it. Also, last year we had a hawk in our yard in Galway on a garden post with bars on its wings. You answered it afterwards, up like on its shoulders, bars. A hawk I had never seen before. And to go back to the feeding the birds with your hands, one of the most joyful afternoons I had with my grandchildren last year, because they've seen me do it many times. It's hard to get a 4-year-old and a 9-year-old grandchild to hold still. So I put them in chairs underneath the bird feeders and had them sit very still. And I had paper towels with birdseed across their lap,
mm-hmm.
and they sat there without moving for about an hour and a half and
Get
had
out.
Multiple birds land on them. And they could hear the that you're talking about and the little breeze from, and it was one of the most magical
Wonderful.
Grandparent moments I've ever
great.
Had because the children thought I was like a fairy godmother.
Dr. Doolittle.
It was incredible.
You have some very
anyway,
patient grandchildren.
Oh, they were amazing, but it was like watching like Snow White or somebody, you know, when the little birds yeah. come around, it was like watching that, and the kids felt that. So
what a great scheme to keep them quiet. Right. I got to try that. Ooh, even
yeah.
if there are no birds.
And,
quiet, and, there may be a bird.
And it's one of those really, really inexpensive ways for grandmothers to look like a goddess.
Yeah, right.
Cool.
You're
so,
it. You're, yeah.
Thanks, Janice.
Great story.
Yeah, have a great day, and tell me what that hawk is. Thank
you. What do you think, Rich?
Well, I have to ask, if you're still there, is what month this was, because in the summertime
we lost her.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. In the summertime there are hawks that do come around that have black and white barring on the wings, and that could very well have been it. There are other hawks that have black and white on the back rather than the wings, and that could be a little overlap and confusing if you're looking at the wrong spot and thinking it's the other.
Right.
So the candidate hawk I'm thinking of summertime is a red-shouldered hawk, and actually, they can be found year-round, but...
So that's a fair guess.
It's red-shouldered hawk.
All right. Let's go to Ellen in Kingston. Ellen, you're on.
Yes. I'm not an avid bird watcher, but I was getting ready for work one morning, and the crows in my yard were in... They sounded... All of them sounded hysterical, and mm-hmm. I looked out my dining room window, and on my hedge... There was a hawk sitting there. I know about red-tailed hawks because they're common where I live. But this was about 1.5 times as big. And he was kind of tawny and brown. And he just sat there, and dopey me, I ran to get my camera. And by the time I got back, he was gone.
Oh.
But I've never seen a hawk like that. Do you have any idea? He was causing pandemonium in the yard. I mean, he wasn't doing anything. He was just sitting there, but it was all the other birds.
Well, once a crow finds a hawk or an owl, he calls in all the rest of the tribe, and they come in and just try to drive that bird out, that bird of prey, out of their territory. And that's the nature of the beast. They don't get along with hawks, and they will harass them to no end.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as to the type of hawk, I wish you had an opportunity to get a picture. Tawny brown, the only one that comes to mind, and it depends on the habitat that you have around there, would be the young northern harrier. Which is kind of like a rusty, tawny, brownish coloration to it.
Is he bigger than a red-tailed hawk?
Well, they look bigger because they're more elongated. They're slimmer. They have longer legs. So a longer tail. So they don't have that chunky appearance of the red-tailed hawk. They have a streamlined, long, tall, slender look to them, and they may look bigger. But again, their habitat is open areas, and so. I'm suspecting that may be it. And they would not hang around long for you in your yard.
No, he didn't. But I'll tell you, the pandemonium went on for a good 20 minutes afterwards.
Yeah, well, the crows.
And then none of the normal birds would come back except the crows that were up in the trees. It was like he just upset everything.
Well, that's what happens because he's in there for business, and they know it. So they're not going to take mm-hmm. any chances. And like I say, crows do not get along with hawks.
Well, Ellen, thank you so much. Our number is 800-348-2551. Chris in Gloversville. Chris.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Hi, hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Hello.
Yep, we're here.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Hello. Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, we're in the Berkshires. We have a bird feeder, and it seems like the chickadees come at a certain time. The goldfinches all are there at one time in the morning and one time in the
afternoon. Oh, mercy.
The specific peach group.
Okay, Chris wants to know about different feeding times for different birds.
It depends on the individual bird, not so much the type of bird. Some individual chickadees are morning risers. They'll feed in the morning and disappear for the day. Others will be there in the afternoon. It depends on the individual particular bird itself, not the type of bird. Although some birds tend to feed later in the day than others, like the cardinal will come, and a mourning dove may be one of the last birds at your feeder before it's totally dark.
So. Okay, yeah, I do find that always there around dusk. But the goldfinches, like, they seem to feed at like 10 o'clock in the morning and 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Well, that's a momentary trend.
Right. As I mentioned earlier, that the goldfinches are move around quite a bit. And I heard a study once that said that, you know, like if you're watching birds over the course of a day, that you could have 100 different birds coming and watching your feeder, so or using your feeder. So you have a group of 10 that comes, use your feeder, and then they move on, and it's replaced by another group of 15. So they move through quite a bit. So you know, with goldfinches, it could be any number of birds.
All right, over to line six and Sarah in West Springfield. Sarah, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is about purple martins. My husband bought me a purple martin house and a nice long pole, and we're trying to decide where to put it. Really, our two options are a nice open flat spot with within about 100 feet of a wooded area that also has a small pond and waterfall. The other one is a little closer to our house and actually visible from our house. It's also flat and open, but does have some trees in the area. I guess the advantage of the first one we thought was that it was close to water, and the advantage of the second one is that we'd be able to see them from the house.
Well,
what are your thoughts?
Go for the water. Go for the water. The purple martin houses are almost always next to near water.
Okay.
So, and good luck with that because there are so few, you're going to have to work hard to get them to come in. But
near the water is the best shot.
Absolutely. It's almost the only chance.
Okay, Sarah, thanks a lot. Okay, let's go to line nine and Betsy, who it says here is listening in Kennebunk, Maine. Are you on, Betsy?
Yes, I am.
How are things up in Kennebunk?
Well, a little cold, a little snow. Right. I was calling because I'm curious about winter food availability in the Capital District area. Here in southern Maine, in spite of the drought, we've had a bumper crop of winter berries on dogwood trees. There's a lot of berries around. And this morning I had a flock of bluebirds and cedar waxwings eating berries off a dogwood tree.
Some people have all the luck. Yes. Yeah. So the food crop is a very essential part of winter bird survival. No food, they got to move or they're in trouble. So fortunate for you. The food crop down here this winter is pretty sparse. It's not doing that well. I haven't seen that many wild berries on, let's say, the cedar trees or the dogwoods or the grapes. Most of those have been we have had a very dry year, and it's taken its toll on the food crop, the winter available food crop. So the half-hardy birds, the ones that stick around like the catbirds, probably have moved south for the winter and rather than stick around. But and so to that I say I would encourage people, if they have the opportunity come spring, is to start planting food friendly bird plants such as the dogwoods and the blueberries and the like.
Well, you're in a great spot there, Betsy. I love Maine, and I hope you have a great winter. Call in again, okay?
Oh, thank you. Thanks. I'm so glad I got help getting online to listen to this. So thank you.
Well, we'll do it again next month. Well, let's see, Kennebunk, Maine.
Oh, yeah.
I
reaching
love
out.
Maine.
Yes.
It's
yes.
A great place to be.
Show.
We have a good audience.
Let's go over to Joan, nearer to us in Albany. Joan, you're on.
Hi, I'm sure it's a boring question, but I'm just tired of trying to foil the squirrels.
Ah, that old question.
Maybe I need to feed them. I've got three different types of feeders, and none of them seem to keep the guys out. So what do you suggest to kind of
feed
it off? Because they're always chowing down my feed.
Three different approaches. One is to the type of food that you're feeding. There's the Niger seed, which is primarily the finches that are interested in it, but the squirrels really don't eat it. So they're not going to bother something like a finch feeder. Safflower seed is also a white seed that the squirrels don't find nearly as...
Could you tell me that first one? I didn't quite catch it.
Well, the first one was Niger or thistle. It's known, you know, It's the small black seed that the goldfinches really like.
Yeah.
The second seed is called safflower seed. It's a white seed, has a tight shell on it. Squirrels aren't that crazy about it. So they might taste it, they might try it, but they definitely won't eat it like they do black oil.
All right.
Your second option is to put use feeders that squirrels can't get to. So they can jump 8 to 10 feet horizontally. So you place your feeders out of jumping distance and put a baffle on the pole so that they can't get past the baffle. And then,
I've tried the physical barrier methods, and they seem to be able to foil all of them.
Yeah, they're cunning, all right.
Clever little devils.
Make sure that you hit the distances, because 8 to 10 feet from jumping off points, 4 to 5 feet high with that baffle.
Well, Nancy Castillo, that was a fast hour, eh?
It flew by.
How do we find out more about Wild Birds Unlimited?
Wild Birds Unlimited, saratogasprings.wbu.com. We're online. We have a great Facebook page. Gearing up for the holiday season, think window feeders, a great gift to bring birds close up.
Fair enough. And Rich Guthrie, we'll look forward to your performance tomorrow up in
Sand Lake, New York at 7 p.m., the town hall.
All right, man. Support comes from Vermont Coffee Company, offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. Spate Consulting and Coaching, Shelburne Falls. More than 20 years of working with leaders and teams committed to purposeful change. See it whole and move it forward. DLSPECHT.com. Penny Farthing Investment Management, Amherst, a socially conscious, fee-only investment advisor of personal retirement and endowment portfolios, including the Bright Penny Community Strategies, brightpenny.org, and Christmas in Little Falls, Saturday, December 10th, horse and carriage rides, a 5K run, Yuletide farm-to-table brunch, and Santa Claus, too, christmasinlittlefalls.com. Thanks again to Rich Guthrie and Nancy Castillo for joining us today. Thanks to you for listening and for the great calls. Thanks to Zach Malloy, a rare bird at the controls. Your phones were answered by Carol Lapani. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's the Science Forum. Stand by now for news.